It's time!
Hey, Dave, listen up, please.
Sometimes a warrior just has to kind of lay down on the ground for a minute, just stay there for a second and have a good bleed.
But what are you waiting for?
I don't know, something amazing.
Matt, for maybe the win.
Gafford, buckle up!
Welcome into the Whole Hog Podcast. Seth Gamble joined alongside the amazingly smart Scotty Borderline. Always got to get that compliment in there somewhere. And we got to ask, Coach Musselman, you lost two in a row. You got to go play TCU at home. How are you feeling?
I mean, that's not real good news.
That is not very good news. You do have to play a tough TCU team, and we'll get to that. But first, we knew coming into this game, Scotty, that it was going to be difficult with Reggie Perry on one side and Arkansas just being utterly lacking rebounding. And it proved to be not as bad as you might have thought, but still not great.
No, Reggie Perry was pretty good the other night. And you know, if you watch Eric Musselman's post-game press conference, he was asked multiple times about Reggie Perry and the impact that he made. And basically, he said he was just really good at drawing fouls. And he lived at the free throw line the other night. That's what killed Arkansas. That Mississippi State went 27 of 31 at the line. And Reggie Perry had more free throws attempted than Arkansas did as a team. And you look at Reggie Perry's game, he had – I think just a couple of blocks, like he swatted one of Mason Jones's runners on the right block out of bounds. And it was kind of funny right after it happened, like Mason just kind of walked over toward him or walked in his direction, just kind of gave him a head nod. It was like, yeah, you got me that time. But other than that, I think he only made like just a couple of post moves for scores. I mean, everything else was just like put back dunks or second chance points. I think there were back-to-back possessions where he hit turnaround hook shots over Mason Jones and Adriel Bailey, and I think that was about the extent of the damage that Perry did in terms of just like back to the basket work. But you know, he was really good on the glass again. I think that was like his 10th double-double of the year, and 20 and 10 for the third straight game. He was the first Mississippi State player to do that in three straight games, and like, I think 20 years. So it was pretty impressive. And then on the other side, Arkansas just didn't have enough offensively, didn't defend the three-point line great. And I thought, you know, Isaiah Joe just had an all-around kind of off night. He kind of got lost on defense a couple of times and gave up open threes. And then we all saw the one time where he tried to close out on a three and just kind of stubbed his toe and fell to the ground. That was not a great moment for him. And then he struggled from the floor. So it was a pretty rough night.
Yeah, that's going to be on some highlight film somewhere down the road on some kind of SEC network or something. He got.
Might show up on Come On, Man.
Yeah.
Or Shaq to the Fool.
Yeah, he got.
Probably Shaq to the Fool more so than football, you know.
But that is an unfortunate event for. When I saw that, I was like, oh, Isaiah. You know, it happens to the best. It happens to the best of us, but that just kind of sucks. Reggie Perry, as you said, it was early in the game, Arkansas decided that they weren't going to double him. And where he was hitting those hook shots. And then when Arkansas decided they would double him, he didn't hurt them that bad from the field. It was, like you said, him getting the free throw line. And sometimes I like to listen to Chuck and Matt Zimmerman on the radio, and I was listening to them towards the end of the game. And, you know, Zimmerman was saying, hey, foul Perry. When Arkansas was trying to come back into the game and foul, he said he's a 69% free throw shooter on the year. He should, like, he's due to miss like his next five or six, and he never did. And so when you have a guy that shoots 69% on the year and comes in and shoots what he did from the free throw line,
he's 14 out of 15.
And I mean, that's just not your night.
No, not at all. And you know, Mississippi State, aside from Perry's 26 and 13, they got pretty good production from DJ Stewart. They put three other guys in double figures. DJ Stewart had 14, Nick Weatherspoon 11, and Tyson Carter had 10. Those guys were a combined 9 of 30 from the floor. So you feel like you defended the role players pretty well, but 4 of their buckets were threes. And then Iverson Molinar, a freshman, hit a couple pretty big shots. He was 2 of 3 from three. So they just kind of lost him. And it's kind of a mixture of that and just some timely scores from them. They just kind of put him over the edge.
Yeah, I wrote down Molinar's name a few times. It's kind of a difference maker, one of those role players that came in and helped the Bulldogs. But all of this that happened in Starkville makes the rematch in Fayetteville pretty interesting. What do you think is going to happen? And can Arkansas come back and win that game in Fayetteville, Scotty?
I mean, I think so. I think home court advantage gives you a few points. Is that game on a weeknight?
I think that's I thought it was a Saturday. Let me Google it.
Yeah, if it's a Saturday game, I don't have any doubt in my mind. Yeah, that's a Saturday on February 15th. That's one of the sellouts. And Arkansas fans are going to jump at the chance to get on Reggie Perry as much as they can for a couple hours. But that should be a really fun atmosphere.
Did it seem like to you that Perry was a little mouthy in that game? I mean, we're not there, so we can't see it. But there's a few times that the announcers were saying that he was talking to the Arkansas bench.
Yeah, I think he understands everything that went into that game. Because, I mean, he was the reason that the game was the way it was, the way his recruiting went down. And I don't have any doubt that he, you know, maybe gave a little bit extra at some points, just because he wanted to prove a point that, you know, I'm in the right place, chose the right school, no matter what the circumstances behind the scenes might have been. I noticed that too, and he kind of had a bleep-eating grin on his face a handful of times too. It was his night, but I think given that, you know, there's a little bit less than a month between now and then, I don't think Musselman's going to worry too much about that game, because he's got, what, three road games before then. But definitely you want to play well and limit an opposing team's star player on your home floor in hopes that you can, you know, split the season series.
All right, Scotty. We haven't talked about the Kentucky game. It was so far back, but it would almost be – it would be wrong of us to go back that far, but it would also be wrong of us not to mention that when Calipari got tossed, I've been covering the Razorbacks just this year. It's the first year that I've been covering them, but I've been going to games since I was a freshman in college, and I went to some periodically throughout. It's the loudest I've heard Bud Walton Arena.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's definitely top three for me, and I think the moment that Calipari got tossed, I think for that – like next 5-10 seconds, maybe even a little bit longer than that, it was as loud as I've ever heard it. And Dudley's been covering Arkansas for a long time, and he's been either covering the program or with the program since like the 80s. So he's seen, or he's heard Barnhill when it's been rocking, and he's covered Arkansas, you know, since Bud Walton Arena opened, and he said that was the loudest he'd heard it. The other two moments I think of are, you know, obviously the Michael Qualls dunk to beat Kentucky several years ago, the Tennessee game in December, late December 2017.
And Arkansas won.
Arkansas won that game, yeah. Beat Tennessee, and Daryl Macon and Jalen Barford and Daniel Gafford too just set that place off. Like, it was unbelievable. The game finished in the 90s, like it was 90-something. I think in overtime,
yes,
if I'm not mistaken.
Because I think wasn't that the game Arkansas hit like 3 straight 3s to start overtime and get like a 9-point run in the overtime?
Yeah,
and
then one of the things I remember most about that game is Anton Beard taking a really, really quick three in transition in the corner. And you're like, dude, what are you doing? Like, milk the clock, pull the ball out and run some clock. But he pulled a right corner three and drilled it, and the place just went absolutely berserk. And then the only other game that I can really think of off the top of my head was just, I think it was Oklahoma State, maybe January 2018.
Okay.
I'd have to go back and look at that. But, yeah, it was January 27th, 2018. Arkansas beat Oklahoma State by 1 in the Big 12 SEC Challenge. That game was pretty intense.
All right. let's move forward now. Let's preview another Big 12 SEC challenge in Arkansas playing TCU. This is the first time Arkansas has played TCU in this Big 12 SEC challenge. Seems like most of the time they get paired up with Oklahoma State. I'm trying to think, who else have they gotten paired up with before? I know they played Iowa State, but was that a part of the Big 12?
Yeah, it was. Okay. Yeah, back I think that was Bobby Portis's last season.
Okay. TCU coming off a huge win against Texas Tech, beating a ranked Texas Tech team, and they are a team that's just right there on the bubble. They're not necessarily, if you look at Lunardi's projections, they're not a next four out or next four out. Like, they're not in the top eight that are out. But if they get a win over Arkansas, there's going to be some reversal of fortunes. You really feel like TCU, they started off 3-0 in the Big 12, and they have an opportunity here, and they're going to try and come into Bud Walton Arena and seize.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned they got up to a 3-0 start. They beat Iowa State at home, and then they went to Kansas State and won. And I don't know if you've heard it called this before, but Kansas State's arena is called the Octagon of Doom. So anytime you can go into the Octagon of Doom and win, yeah, it's a pretty crazy name, pretty great name. That's pretty solid. And then you follow it up with a win over Oklahoma State, who's not great, but they're kind of scrappy. They hung with Baylor for a long time last weekend, and I thought they were going to beat Baylor. Baylor was, I think, number one in the country at that point. And then they go on the road and just get boat raced by West Virginia and Oklahoma, so you're kind of wondering what's going on with them. But two kind of tough places to play, especially West Virginia. That place can be a hornet's nest when you're not playing well.
Right.
But to come back and beat Texas Tech was pretty solid win. And I looked this up the other day. Desmond Bain, who's TCU's kind of go-to guy on the offensive end, scored 27 against Texas Tech, and he joined a pretty elite list of guys who have scored 25-plus points against a Chris Beard-coached Texas Tech defense.
Yeah.
Also on that list, Josh Jackson of Kansas, played in the pros. Frank Mason, Kansas, played in the pros, is playing in the pros. Devontae Graham, Kansas. I think he's tearing it up with the Hornets right now. Trey Young.
Okay.
And Javon Carter at West Virginia.
Okay.
You know, the guy who looked like he was 40 years old.
The bald guy, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, the bald 40-year-old.
I swear.
Looked like he was an eighth-year senior.
Yes.
But that's a pretty good group to be included with. So Arkansas's got to be on his toes with that guy, or he's going to burn him.
I heard a stat when Bain, if you listen to the Whole Hall podcast, we talked to a writer for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, and he said when Bain scores 20 or more, TCU's undefeated. That's something to watch out for as well. If Arkansas can limit him, then the entire Horned Frog offense just doesn't work.
Right. And a big part of his game is he shoots the three really well. 43.5% for the season. And in five conference games to this point, or I think, what is it, six conference games, 49%. So he's coming in on a roll from three-point range. And like I mentioned a little bit earlier, Arkansas just got lost on defense, especially on the perimeter at Mississippi State, and gave the Bulldogs some, you know, two open looks. And if Arkansas does that on Saturday, Bain could make them pay for sure.
All right, Scotty, we're getting close here to ending an abbreviated, really, basketball podcast in Mid-America. As we, if I look at the time, sometimes we get in here and just keep talking and talking.
Yeah.
But okay, I got two questions for you. We'll go one at a time. Has your outlook of the Razorbacks changed with the last two games and where they're going to finish in the end of the season?
I don't think so, because if you look at those two games on paper, Arkansas didn't really match up with Kentucky, especially along the front line. And Kentucky's got, while their front line's really good, they've got some of the more talented guards in the league too, like Ashton Hagans and Tyrese Maxey, Emmanuel Quickley. Those three guys combined with, you know, Nick Richards and E.J. Montgomery, although E.J. Montgomery wasn't really a factor against Arkansas, Nick Richards went for a double-double. He had like 17 and 11 or something like that. I didn't, you know, although Arkansas was like a one-point favorite going into that game, I was like telling people who were asking me what they thought of the game. And I know this going to sound ridiculous, like almost a week later, but I thought Kentucky would kind of pull away at the end, not in the fashion that they did, obviously.
Right. Not in a
with that big 15-0, 17-2 run, but I thought Arkansas would hang for a little while, but Kentucky's depth and length and athleticism would just kind of smother Arkansas down the stretch. So I didn't expect Arkansas to beat Kentucky, and I didn't expect Arkansas to beat Mississippi State on the road. For some reason, Humphrey Coliseum is a really hard place to win.
And especially
it's not,
for the Hogs.
And it's not because the atmosphere is electric. It's just kind of, like you watch on TV, it just kind of seems dull and kind of dim in there, I guess. And I don't know, opponents just go in there and shoot like the like it is dim in there.
Yeah, the Hump is a weird place for Arkansas to try and win a game. I've noticed that just watching the Hogs since I can, as long as I can remember, the Hump was a hard place for them to win. You talk about that dim atmosphere, just real quick side story. Tennessee does that really well. Like, they have the court lit and then nothing else. It's
yeah,
kind of
wild.
Almost,
just like Madison Square Garden and the Staples Center.
Yeah.
Like, if you watch games in those venues on TV, like, the only thing that looks like it's lit up in the arena is the floor.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, it just kind of creates an interesting atmosphere.
I agree with you. I don't think that the predictions or the outlook of this team has changed. I still believe that they are an NCAA tournament team, but they have to win. They have to start winning. They have to break a streak, which you made a good point. I like sitting by you at games when we're at a Bud Walton Arena, because there's just certain things that I can get from you. And, you know, there's a few of those times during the Kentucky game that, you know, Arkansas's playing good defense. Arkansas's in the right spot. Everything's going the way that Arkansas's supposed to do, what Eric Musselman coached his team to do. And then Higgins would blow by you with an explosive first step.
Right.
He'll pull up, and you can't guard that. And, you know, you looked at me and just go, that's just athletes.
Yeah. And I remember one point specifically when I think Ashton Higgins had the ball on the perimeter and Kentucky was trying to get something working in the half court. And Emmanuel quickly came off a screen, but he froze Mason Jones. And just like that, he was in the middle of the paint, caught a pass from Higgins, and then just tossed a floater up. And that's just those guards are so good at just quick peeling off screens for scores. And, you know, Arkansas just wasn't quick enough, wasn't good enough that day.
They were not, but that doesn't mean that they won't come back. And if they ever play Kentucky again in a tournament or something, or, you know, Musselman's going to bring in a pretty good recruiting class as well that maybe have some more athletes from what we've seen that can compete like that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. As we wrap it up here, a TCU coming into town, Bud Walton Arena, SEC Big 12 Classic. I'm going to put you on the spot, Scotty. What's a bold prediction from you about this Arkansas-TCU game?
That's a good question. I think we might see a shift in the lineup on Saturday.
Okay.
Arkansas, I think, has started the same lineup for 10 or 11 straight games. The only time they've deviated was the Northern Kentucky game after Mason Jones, air quotes, hurt his shoulder at Georgia Tech. And I just don't see, you know, Musselman said on Monday, I think previewing the Mississippi State game, that there's beauty in consistency in terms of his starting lineup. But you're not getting anything from the perimeter from a guy like Desi Sills. He's still not shooting the ball well. And over his last couple games, he's not finishing at the rim at the rate that he was early on, which is, and that part of his game is what kept him on the floor. So what do you do there? Well, there's a guy off your bench, Reggie Chaney, who's shooting over 90% from the floor in conference play. And Arkansas's plus 28 with him on the floor the last three games, minus 22 when he's not. And so I think it's about time. And I'm obviously not telling Eric Musselman what to do.
Right.
Because he's gonna do whatever he feels is best. But I think it might be time for a change of scenery for Desi Sills. Throw your most efficient player over the last three games into the starting lineup and just kind of see where it goes from there.
You want to go with Bailey and Chaney?
Bailey and Chaney. And they haven't played, I think, according to my HoopLens subscription, they've played less than 70 offensive possessions together. So there's not just a ton of substance there. Not a great sample size, but Arkansas wants to rebound better, keep TCU off the glass, Reggie Chaney and Adriel Bailey on the interior, I think, gives you the best chance to maybe match up with TCU and grab some boards, which could be the difference in the game.
And something that we didn't see, I can't remember, and I don't remember writing down, against Mississippi State, and there's another lineup that surprisingly enough lets Arkansas rebound well, is the five guard lineup mm-hmm. as well. You could almost rotate Chaney and Bailey in, and then if you need both of them, you take them both out and put your five guard in, and it's almost a completely different set in how Arkansas would run the game, and you could throw somebody off with that.
Right, and the five guard lineup defensively has been really good at, you know, turning teams over. Mm-hmm. They're just not that group's got to get out and transition and score easy buckets, because it's been kind of strange to see how they've struggled shooting the ball, you know, with five guards on the floor. But at the same time, you've got two guys in that lineup who aren't really perimeter threats, although Jalen Harris has already surpassed his 3-point total from last year. On he did it after the Kentucky game. He had hit 9 threes on one more three than last year on 36 fewer attempts, but still, I don't think opponents are that too concerned about his perimeter shot.
I think my bold prediction is that I think you'll see Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe both go for over 20. I think it's about time that they haven't
stepped up.
It's
time for Isaiah to break out. He's shooting 21.4% from three in their three conference losses, 44.4% in their three wins. So you can almost tell how the day is going to go just by the way he's shooting the ball.
And when he started off hot against Kentucky, you're going, all right, here we go. And then he went 30 plus minutes.
31 minutes, 21 seconds without a bucket. That's and then crazy. Against Mississippi State, he went 25-14 without one. So it's time for him to get going.
It is indeed, and it's time for us to get going as well. So for Scotty Portal.
I gotta go catch up with Van Horn.
Yeah, we're going to talk to DVH. Scotty's going to talk to DVH, and so we will have all of that great content on WholeHogSports.com. Make sure to check that out. Check out the other podcast on the Whole Hog Sports Network of podcasts. We got to sit down this week with Richard Davenport talking about his great stories over the past decade, which include Arkansas recruiting a guy from Denmark in Hjalte Froholt, and also that famous Alex Collins story about
his
college.
That series that you've been doing with everyone's been pretty fascinating. I've enjoyed that.
It's interesting to see everybody's take and their perspective on what's happening.
Everybody's experiences those things is different. It's pretty cool to get those unique perspectives, no doubt.
And Richard gives us a nice information about the whole Alex Collins and his mom stealing his national letter of intent thing, so that was pretty unique. Make sure to check that out. And so long for Scotty Borderline, and I'm Seth Campbell. We'll see you back here next week on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America.